We're going to make a start now. If I can ask everyone to sit down, and we will begin the final session of this afternoon. Our last session today is a plenary panel thinking about the relation between research and policy, and particularly drawing out the implications for policy. It's going to be chaired by Annie Mullins from Vodafone Group, but also very active in this country, first in the UK, the Home Office Task Force on Internet Safety, and then in a member of the Council, the UK Council on Child Internet Safety, and also on a pan-European level in the Teach Today project, about which I think she's going to say a few words. So I'm going to let Annie introduce the panel and the speakers, and you know them well. And thanks for your attention.
Okay, hello everybody. Some of you know me. I just wanted to say, take the opportunity to have a few words as somebody from industry attending the conference today, because a lot of you are researchers, as opposed to people like myself who are looking for things when I come to conferences to see what it is I should be doing, what it is I should be thinking about in terms of industry. I guess there's sort of some reflections about how often and how long are we going to keep meeting and talking, and are we just having a haw-haw kind of debate all the time, but we never actually join up together amongst the stakeholders, with researchers, with NGOs, with industry. How do we make things happen? And I think that's one of the challenges maybe going on from this conference, and maybe a challenge I should set for Sonia, really, is how is you kids online actually going to be effective in having some direct outcomes for implementation, whether it's for policymakers, parents, children, industry, and so forth. What sense do we make of the research that you've all done that we can actually take away and do something with? So there's probably a number of people like me from industry kind of going, that's great, but what am I going to do with this? And how can we change? What do we need to do in these environments, these digital environments? What do we need to do in the real world? How do we, you know, bridge this so that we can bring people like parents? I kind of reflected. I read the research, the policy implications last night about 1 o'clock in the morning after quite a drunken evening with some of you, and I thought, I have to read this. So maybe I got it wrong. But I was a little worried when I read it, thinking there's a lot in that report about parents really not being up to speed, the kind of worry about different cultures in terms of mediating and controlling and setting rules for children, and that's different across different cultures and so forth. But I just had an anxiety that there may be a picture emerging that we kind of almost, and I've heard it echoed elsewhere, that maybe we should even give up on parents a little bit. Is it worth all the effort? I don't know, but it seems that if parents are responsible, we can't give up on them. And I guess what needs some clarity is, what are my responsibilities as somebody from industry towards parents about bringing new products and services to the market? What are your responsibilities as researchers to help those audiences, be it parents and children and young people? What do you bring as outcomes from your research that can help shape and build the environment in a positive way? I mean, I felt, you know, we've kind of had really interesting discussions today, from kind of filtering, from the kind of Janice Wallach's research, which I felt was quite challenging to us. But I guess there are no silver bullets, as seems to be the term that everyone uses. And I guess we've all got a role to play, and we've all got to kind of mediate and manage how we can fuse that together to do something productive. So I guess that's my challenge. That's what I'm really interested in, is taking some of the work you've done and being able to translate it into something practical, meaningful, and real for the people that we're actually researching and talking about. I think we spend a lot of hot house hours, and certainly I do, in meetings, and I'm really somebody focused on, you know, trying to get out there and really talk to people and get them excited. I mean, you know, it has to be balanced. It has to be, these technologies are, you know, it is moving at such a pace. And somebody from industry, I kind of think, I feel at a very critical, I think we're at a very critical moment. I just want to do a check here, a sort of sense check. Those of you who've got Apple and Google phones, put your hands up. Come on, up a bit higher, I can't see, I might have to make you jump. Up! church. Okay, so a few of you. What about those of you who downloaded an application to get the weather or the Kama Sutra? Come on, come on. A few of you. Okay. I've been watching that. There was one in the papers last week about the Kama Sutra application. So I ordered it. I've got a slide that in the break my colleagues talked to me about and said, look, we've been meeting as industry, and we had an important meeting. We're meeting around location, and we're keeping most people out at the moment of this big meeting that we're having with industry, partly because we just need to talk amongst ourselves. There are different providers, different things happening, but I think we feel we're on the edge of something that's going to kind of be quite a shift in some of the issues that we're facing around safety, privacy, all these sorts of matters. And we're going to have to sort of do a bit of ruminating amongst ourselves and shouting and fighting and so forth. And we've invited one or two people into that arena at the moment, but it is a bit of a closed shop. But this is one of the slides that we felt from industry that, given the audience that you are, perhaps would be interesting to share with you, because we're trying to get to grips with this new world that's becoming much more disaggregated, much more innovative, much more reliant on less control is shifting from big businesses, or it's being shared and mediated across to others that are very small in this chain, value chain, and there are shifts of power between different types of businesses. If I said Apple and Google versus Telefonica and Vodafone, there's some big issues going on around networks, platforms, services, and so forth, and not to mention some of the social networking companies. So this, it's kind of a hard industry, and it's changing really rapidly, and I think we're at another crux. So I think this is an important time for action, because it is going to be blinding to, if people don't understand Web 2.0 and what's gone before, this is going to be quite challenging about what's coming. So this slide, I just want to quickly go through it. It was really about location and the new location services. And this is not really to demonstrate anything about location, but really to give you a sort of insight to the kind of world we're occupying. It does say regulation will be limited. I think I changed that a little bit to be a little less controversial. I think it said previously before today why it wouldn't work, but I'm not really interested in that so much, but more interested in trying to give you an insight to our sort of world at the moment. So the apps is very important, because apps are really changing the environment. It's kind of a microeconomic kind of place where little people, two men, the one man here in China, because he's in China, although I kind of thought he looked more like Che Guevara or something rather than from a Chinaman, but never mind, he's in China. It's not my slide. And he's developing an app. And they can be from apps, and this is opening up a huge enterprise now, and things like social networking sites, apps on your phone, apps everywhere are going to be very reliant on these people to make this world creative, interesting, sticky, build communities. The apps is really, really a big engine now, but it's very dispersed across the world. And it means that anyone across the world can submit an app to a provider like Apple or so forth. So he's designing his little app. And he's thinking about a particular handset manufacturer. I think that's Korea. Am I correct, that flag? This is a flag testing moment. Yeah? Cool. someone had to tell me before that it was Korea, and I wasn't sure if I was correct. There you go. And that handset manufacturer has a link to the App Store. The App Store on Apple, is on there and linking to that, so you can download the app from America. So you've gone from China to Korea to America, and then as part of that app, it's got what's called location aware. It's an ability to locate, and then you can use. We're seeing apps developing that mean that you can share your location. Your friends on your Facebook can follow your location. I hope everyone understands what location on your phone is, with GPS, cell ID, and all this sort of thing. This is a big thing that's going on at the moment. And finally, the person on locating A is locating user B, who's in France. And it's just to give a little insight about how the global nature of the kind of platforms and things you're dealing with. And in this scenario, you'll see that there was no mobile operator. yet it's going on a mobile phone. It's bypassing the mobile operator, probably using a wireless network because of the capabilities. It could use the mobile. I mean, maybe this slide could involve the mobile operator in here somewhere because you could use their network. So it doesn't really matter, but it's just giving you a sense of the shape of the environment, which is quite difficult. Now, these apps, if you've looked at your apps on your iPhones and your G phones and app stores and everything that's going on, there's zillions of them. There are thousands of them. And to make it a competitive app store, you're going to have thousands of them. But they're done by, you know, one or two people who are trying to, obviously, you know, build a business, get it, make a profit, do well. We're reliant on it because we need these kind of things to make our app stores interesting and keep everybody happy. But within that, there's issues around what are they doing with location, for example. They're building apps into these locations. They're location aware. You can send, as I said, you can send an app to your social networking site. That means that everybody can see your location. So there are all sorts of issues in that. Some of us in this room have been tracking each other. We felt we had to experiment on ourselves. And Trish Church, wherever she is, she keeps saying to me, oh, I see you're in Birmingham at the weekend. And every time she says, I'm really put out every time she tells me that she sees where I've been. So it's kind of just living with that to sort of feel what it's like. But these are really on the, you know, a march at the moment. There's a real changing environment with these sorts of things. So regulating and policy is going to have to take account in a way of the global dimension in a way it hasn't before. And I think we're obviously, we reckon there's big companies and in the room, you know, people like Google, Microsoft, Vodafone, Telefonica, Apple, you know, we are having to get in the room together and we're going to have to work out some means of managing this. Despite, and I think what we came to the conclusion of is that we had different roles in that change, in that chain of people and providers to try and help manage some of this. Whether it can be perfect, whether it can protect all people, whether it'll protect children, I think we're going to figure out. But we're certainly in a new place at the moment than we've been to before. So I think that's quite important that these issues start to emerge on your consciousness. Certainly I've been trying to share with people how Google, I use Google Latitude, you know, it's just one of many programs you know, that are like that. And, you know, it's there and it is a bit, you should try it out yourselves, you should see how it works, you should see how you forget that you've given permission to people locate you and then they remind you out of the blue that they knew exactly where you were. And you can even see down to the house, and particularly with Street View from Google, you can actually see the house that you're in. I showed my mum and dad their house at the weekend, so it was quite interesting just getting reactions. But we are at a different place, and I think it's important just to try and as industry to give you a little bit of insight to that. I guess, you know, one of the big things and challenges for us is really, as industry, we're really trying to, what can we do that's really going to make a difference? How can we respond to sort of the concerns and issues that are being raised? And I guess, you know, I'm not convinced, and many of us are not convinced, that trying to chase down American companies for a video or a fake profile or whatever in America, given the time difference with Europe, is probably the best answer and outcome for you as an individual when you're being harassed, stalked, having nasty comments made about you, whatever it might be. So we've kind of, a lot of us have come together, the industry, and I've probably been to much of my own detriment and my own life. I've pulled this program together of bringing some of the biggest companies together from Google, Vodafone, Telefonica, MySpace, you can see T-Mobile, you can see some of the big partners here, and we've been working with European Schoolnet to really try and help teachers, because we saw lots of evidence, particularly in the UK, and we've seen it coming forth elsewhere in Europe, about teachers, you know, who were at the coalface with children, and they were beginning to suffer. A lot of teachers, we've seen evidence from teacher unions and teaching advocates that they've lost their jobs, they've been suffering terrible bullying at the hands of children. Maybe having a laugh, maybe putting up the fake profile about sir is a joke, nasty comments from ex-pupils, teachers lending children their own phones and then finding photographs on them of them of children. Some teachers have been bringing themselves into disrepute by the comments they make on Facebook, Twitter. All these things are impacting hugely. So we've developed this. I know some of you all know about Teach Today, but it's really going to be launched, as I would see it, around the first week of July on the English side. I think the Germans are also looking to launch their Teach Today. We've tried to scale up, use the limited resources that we've got, and, you know, not replicate lots and lots of different sites, but do one. This is the call from industry to help people really get to grips with some of the issues that the technology may be confronting them with. It may give them difficulties, but also to support them in trying to deal with problems as they arise and maybe learn something about the technology, because I think we've got to promote that, their understanding, their engagement, closing it off, blocking it, asking us to review every video on YouTube before it's ever put out there is not really an answer. And those were some of the pushbacks that we were getting in policy terms was, well, you should review every piece of user-generated content. And that was a very loud cry and a very strong push. And I just don't think that's realistic. So we have to be realistic. But we can respond, and industry will respond, with the right mechanisms, with the things we think will make a difference. So this is one approach that we're doing. It's got lots of information for teachers. I think what's different from stuff that's out there are things like this. We've tried to focus on case studies with real things that can, you know, really draw on real people's experience and to share that with others. So they've got a fake profile. Here's what happened. Here's what you can do to managing your own data, be it your laptop, your data key, your own mobile. Professional conduct issues are huge. Should you have a friend on your Facebook who's an ex-student or is currently a student? Should you be making comments about your school or teachers or students on Twitter? I think we've seen someone in the UK recently brought into disrepute because of that. So this is coming out. I think it's an important response, but this is where we've got to sort of push some of the research, the kind of things that you're doing, into a policy framework that allows us to try and do something, because I don't think we can just keep sitting and meeting and having a good chat, as nice as it is. But, you know, we really want to build things for people that can make a difference. And I'm sure there'll be things that are wrong with it. I'm sure there'll be things that we haven't thought of. But we've done our best here to work with the teaching community. We've done workshops. We've worked with lots of teaching representatives and tried our hardest to get it right with the right information. How it gets out there, how we reach the audience, that's a challenge. And whether it'll be useful in the end when people have got issues is another debate. But we can try, and that's the important thing that we're trying to do. So I thought next we'd follow with another industry person, Maria, from Telefonica. And I thought we'll see what she's got to say, okay, Following what I've kind of laid out a little bit.
Thank you, Annie. Hello, everybody. We have seen today a lot of brilliant presentations regarding about the research that it has been conducted all around the world. For us, like industry, research is the most powerful tool that we can have because it helps us to shape the strategy that guarantees that we can offer safer and safer products for kids that they can use in a responsible way. For us, Telefonica, which is settled in more than 25 countries, and so we are facing a lot of different cultures. And the biggest challenge that we can have is to be able to deploy the same strategy and a valid one that can be valid for every country where we are. We are committed in Telefonica with creating an environment where children can use ICTs and take benefits of them, avoiding misuses. And that is why we provide parents and children with the necessary tools and guidance to use our products and services responsibly. However, we realize that it's very difficult to find the balance between all the benefits that ICT can bring to kids and to the families in general and all the risks that they can face due to the misuse of these technologies. This ambitious commitment that I have mentioned of balancing benefits and risk, we are aware that it's not a simple task and that we cannot tackle alone. For this, it is necessary the collaboration of all stakeholders involved, governments, institutions, industry, civil society, schools, teachers, parents, and of course the kids. We have developed a strategy based in four pillars, and these four pillars help us to offer the best products for our kids, covering a lot of wide range of aspects. The first pillar is self-regulation. We believe that self-regulation is an aspect that has been tackled for the industry because it's going to be easy to implement and overall quickly to implement. And we are able to detect where is the problem, so we are it's very easy for us to apply the measures necessary to solve the problems. For instance, in Telefonica, we have implemented an internal normative to set up control measures to apply while providing adult contents. So the objective is to apply to offer opt-in contents, opt-in option for to block adult contents, and it's already working in European countries, and we are deploying also in South America. We also work in all European countries to develop national code of conduct. We support the Mobile Alliance to fight against child sexual abuse image that was promoted by the GSMA and was presented last year. We also believe, that is our second pillar, in adult products for kids. Research shows that they are heavy users of mobile phones and the internet, and we cannot think that just preventing misuses because we educated, we are going to achieve our goal. So we have work overall in Spain developing adult mobiles for kids since 2005. We have launched two different kind of handsets. One of them is for kids from 10 to 14 years old, and they have different kind of restriction like block SMS premium, they don't have access to adult contents, and they include educative games. For the youngest children from 8 years old, we have launched another one, and this handset only allows SMS and incoming and outgoing calls from the numbers determined by the parents through a website with a PIN code. So this is a very safe telephone that only can be used by the kids and from the people that the parents allow to do it. Also, we offer parental controls for internet, and they are so easy to implement. You only need to call the service center. You ask for the parental control, and it's already settled on your broadband home. You don't need to do anything, to install anything in the computer, and this is a very a big facility that we offer. So the parents that they are not very used to use internet or to touch the computer, they don't have an excuse not to install it because they don't really have to do anything. The other of our pillars is education, because we think that really education is something that can help to kids to make a safer and overall responsible use of new technologies. We carry on several initiatives. In Spain, together with the Spanish NGO Protégeles, we are running lectures in schools. And since the beginning, we have reached more than 100,000 kids. In Europe, we have dedicated websites with information. In Czech Republic, there is an initiative to fight against bullying. And regarding South America, that was another thing. In South America, my colleague, Charo Sadava from the University of Navarra has presented the survey that we conducted in South America, and the reason why we conducted this survey is because we wanted to spread the same strategy, but we realized that we didn't know anything about the use that children was doing of new technologies, the faces that they could be, the problems that they could be facing, the risk. We didn't know where they use it, we didn't know where they learned to use it, if how did they react if they face a problem. And this is why we decided to conduct the survey. This survey has helped us also, from one side, to detect the needs of South American kids and parents, and always it has helped us to shape an educational program that started this year. And in the step that we are now, we are training trainers to empower these trainers to go to the school to teach other teachers, other kids, to make a safer use of new technologies. I also have to add that from September, an updated version of the questionnaire will be launched again in South America, so the same school or new ones that want to participate, they can do it. So we will be able to compare the results 2 years after if anything has changed, if things are going better, worse, if the educational program that we have launched has had any effective in the use that they are doing or not. We expect improvement in the use that they are doing. And during this year, 2009. We are conducting right now this survey in Spain, and the results will be ready at the end of the year. And after the summer, we will start in UK, and we will expect to continue next year with other European countries. We are also working in Portugal and Italy to continue with this study. And the last of our pillars is the alliance. As I said at the beginning, this is not something that we can tackle alone, so we have agreements with all kind of stakeholders that can be that can help us to achieve the strategy. For instance, Annie has to speak about the Teach Today, where we are since the beginning promoting and to helping to shape this nice initiative. Another of our partners are Protégeles, Senet International, FOSI, Aldeas Infantiles, the Children Ombudsman of Madrid, and so on, a lot of NGOs that are helping us. And that's all that I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll move swiftly on to Janice Richardson. I don't know if all of you know Janice, but she's been the coordinator of the INSAFE program for quite a long time now. So hopefully she has some very interesting things to say about the policy implications of the research today. Over to you, Janice.
Thank you. Well, what perhaps some of you don't know is that I also represent European SchoolNet, which coordinates the INSAFE network. European SchoolNet is a consortium of 31 education ministries across Europe, in Australia, and some other countries. So I will speak from the point of view of both awareness and education. And I would like to begin, even before thinking of the implications for policy, in saying that maybe because I'm an oldie, but I believe that technology is there to serve us. And if we can use it to enhance what we do, to make our life more comfortable, to make it richer, then it's technology that's really worth taking on board. And I think young people have understood that. They have a very open and fresh approach to life, and they've been able to take up these fantastic advantages because there are so many opportunities and advantages. I'd like to speak about 3 points. Today, we've talked about research, which is absolutely normal. I would like to congratulate Sonia and her team for having gathered so much of the European research and research from other countries so that we can really start seeing the road ahead. And I think what I do see from this is the very lack of methodology, and I'm really counting on Sonia and EU Kids Online to put some of that methodology into the research so that we can see very clearly what we have, where we're going, not just these dangers that we keep talking about, but the opportunities and what we can do about the risks so that they're not dangers, but just another way of letting young people be young people and discover this fabulous world in front of us. As an awareness raiser, and you've probably heard this from me before, so I don't want to bore you, but awareness raising is a cycle, and we have to begin by looking at vulnerabilities, and then we have to implement the campaign that we develop in keeping with the new issues, the emerging technology, and the vulnerabilities. But when once we've implemented that campaign, we need once again to do some research and measure the impact and know precisely what we have done, because awareness raising, as we know, can also be a dangerous activity, otherwise known as propaganda, if it's not done in the right way. So I think it's extremely important that we look at research from 2 levels. 1, the vulnerability. But 2, what are we achieving with the awareness raising? And so where do we go next? So it is a continuum. It's a cycle. And we're counting on Sonia's network to work very closely with our own INSAFE awareness raising network so that we can really move ahead. Secondly, culture. what would technology be without people who are very aware of the culture? And some of you have heard that my theory on media literacy is that today we have this huge dose of social literacy and of cultural literacy which really affect the way that we're going to use technology. So in terms of culture, we have a fabulous network here ready to implement different educational and awareness raising policies. And each of these nodes works in its own country, knows the national territory, understands what young people do, what the culture is, what the legislation is. But to date, I think that no one has really drawn on this very mine and a wealth of possibilities. And I would like to see EU Kids Online shape the surveys that each of our nodes are doing so that from these surveys, which are so essential to their work, we can start using a common methodology so that we are no longer comparing pears and apples or a few bananas, but instead of that, we are asking similar questions in a similar way so that we can really compare the results, and then we won't get the discrepancies that we saw this morning where suddenly in Italy there are fewer people today using technology or online, being online than there were 3 or 4 years ago. So I would like to see you harness a little bit the resources that we have as a network, work with us how to get out the best surveys, how to draw on that and get comparable data from across Europe and beyond. Thirdly, I would like to talk about media literacy. I have been provoking a little bit here today because I come to the sad conclusion that we've not really advanced in 10 years when I worked with the Council of Europe and we put out something called the Internet Literacy Handbook that many of you may know and which the INSAFE network has revised twice. I feel that media literacy, well, I much prefer the term information literacy, is what all of this is about, how we equip young people to move ahead, harness the technology that Annie was mentioning, and get the very best out of life. And I think that here we need some real fundamental research to show us what are these skills that young people need, how do you develop these skills. What we're talking about at the moment is how they're using the skills, but I want to know how you develop them so that we can make sure that 100% of young people are able to develop them and not the limited proportion today. So I think they're the three things that I've got to say. It's not so much the implications for policymakers because I don't think we're there yet. I think we need to get some really strong research now to lay the foundations for our work ahead, and then we can perhaps have very logical policy and move forward with this European approach, which we have begun to develop, but we have a long, long way to go. And Teach Today, I think, is a very important step in this direction. We're very proud to be working with industry in this initiative.
You better have said that. Okay. Thank you, Janice. I'll try and move us swiftly across to Agnieszka. It was a challenge for me to say that well. I think I did it.
Yes.
From Nobody's Child. Nobody's Child. That's an old song, isn't it? Nobody's Children. It is Nobody's Children Foundation. An old song, Nobody's Child. I could sing it for you, but I won't. But over to you, Agnieszka.
Thank you. In Poland, we are part of a so-called Polish Safer Internet Center, and I would like to highlight 2 points as kind of directions, recommendations for policy. First, we have seen from research that younger children are getting online, and that actually preschool children are becoming the fastest growing group online. Kids under the age 6 and 7 are at the developmental stage where they want to explore different things, where they want to experiment and play with different toys. So at the beginning, they would use computer to play games, puzzles, and they often amaze us by the way how they are able to follow directions on a game, for instance, that they have never played before. And then later on, many of them probably would go online to learn their ABC and to do it online rather than do it from books. So they are indeed becoming computer literate at a very early age. And as a result, parents may need to speak to those children younger, earlier than we expect. And I think that we can also, that it is reasonable to expect that parents of preschool children will have enough knowledge, enough understanding of new technologies to be able to guide and support children in this particular age group. And then quite a lot of discussion is going around about integrating internet safety into school curriculum, which of course is very needed. But I would say that actually preschool children, kindergarten children should become a priority for awareness-raising efforts. And I would advocate that we look into what educational strategies we can design to deliver to this particular age group that was born with the mouse in their hands. And I would also like to see more research on how this age group behaves online, or what kind of risks they encounter, and how actually they manage to cope with these risks. The second point, we also know from research that children and young people are very reluctant in telling adults about different negative experiences that they have online. And if they choose to tell someone, it would rather be someone from their peers, like a best friend, for instance. This point has already been mentioned several times in the previous presentations, but I want to highlight it once more. I would advocate that schools look into possibilities of introducing peer support systems within which pupils are both encouraged but also empowered to take positive action. For instance, research shows that cyberbullying is such a rising trend in so many European countries, and I think the role of bystanders, witnesses, is often overlooked in cyberbullying incidents, which are often seen as an issue between the victim and the bully only. And whereas a witness of such situation really has a huge role to play, both in supporting the victim but also in influencing the bully's behavior. Very few bystanders actually intervene for many reasons. First of all, because they may be afraid of becoming a new target of the bully, also because they don't know what to do. So I mentioned peer support systems because we know that when peers step in, when peers intervene, cyberbullying can be more easily stopped. And such peer support systems have already been introduced in several countries. We have seen examples from Finland, from the UK, where young people give support to each other on different issues of concern, not only on in relation to online environment. And this, I would say, definitely increases students' sense of shared responsibility and a kind of feeling of companionship among pupils. And I really see it important that children in such situations of negative use of new technologies, children and young people don't turn a blind eye, that those their fears and lack of skills do not turn into apathy and tolerance for such negative uses of new technologies, that young people have to be sensitized that such a climate of indifference is not a solution to the problem, but actually can be part of the problem. And those young people have to be within peer support system. They would have to be equipped with skills on how to intervene, how to show disapproval on to different negative uses of new technologies, how to, for instance, limit the power of the bully. And as one of the colleagues mentioned before, that there needs to be more self and co-regulation among young people themselves. So these two issues that I'd like to highlight, more education at the preschool level and more options for peer support, different peer support opportunities, different peer support works. Thank you.
Right, that's Dieter Carstensen. I can never say your name either. I'm challenged, you know, on the language front, definitely. Dieter's from Save the Children and also from Inasco. They told me it wasn't a petrol station, but I wasn't so sure. But actually, it's a very exciting coalition now of children's charities across Europe, which I think is fantastic in terms of trying to bring an orderly approach to the voice of children and the issues that we should be thinking and considering. So I think we're looking to some exciting times ahead as we have to headbutt you a few times in meetings around some of the things and the challenges you might make to us. But I think it's a very important coalition, and I think we're going to wish you well. And I'm very interested to see how you can end this with your reflections and thoughts about being the voice of children along with Agnieszka. So away you go.
Thank you very much. Petrol station today, it was Tesco yesterday, so... but it's actually called ENACSO, so the European NGO Alliance on Child Safety Online. And I'm happy to see that both Agnieszka plus members from the UK CHIS, NSPCC and Mr. John Carr are also part of this very exciting network. There's a term that has emerged from EU Kids Online, or at least I only learned about it reading into papers coming from EU Kids Online, evidence-based policy. I like this. I like it a lot. But can we actually match the timely challenges with evidence-based? Is it really possible? So the challenges we're facing today or even tomorrow that we haven't even thought about going in to do appropriate research on, how are we going to be able to base any policy decisions on something we are only going to understand from an academic level in years to come? That is a challenge that we are faced with on a day-to-day basis. There was a mentioning from the Australian representative here about the filtering sort of discussion, debate, that whole sort of process of going from not having it and basically going into possibly creating a draconian measure and the implications going on there. It seems to be that the experiences that have been, several countries have been gone through or going through before in other places are not fully appreciated in the discussion. At least that was my reading of it, and I think that was pretty much also what you were trying to bring forward today. EU Kids Online actually does provide, as many of the other networks like INSAFE and hopefully in the future ENACSO, repositories for good learnings and experiences that we can use so we overcome these starting problems and understanding of the issues and solutions that we need to provide. So hopefully with the collaboration that we commence tomorrow in a formal way by being part of the international advisory panel, we will all be able to have our say and voices heard by the community here present today. I'm going to talk about a couple of points. I must admit, I was sometimes surprised at what I heard today. Also left a bit maybe questioning of the representation of what we actually heard today, whether it actually matches what other people they see in their daily work. But to start from one step behind, according to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, we all have, as duty bearers, an obligation to ensure that the protection of children against harm and abuse is upheld. And it must always be done in the best interest of the child. Sometimes we go wrong trying to do the right thing. I think what happens in Australia is a good example of how a good intention might actually turn out to be something that it was not really meant to be in the beginning. Other examples I'm sure we can easily find. It's also being mentioned that adults, they lack the sufficient understanding of how to adequately address the challenges that children actually face online. It's been mentioned before, why don't we then refer to peer-to-peer solutions? Are young people better equipped or better equipped to understand and reply back to their peers on issues they face and problems and so forth? I don't have the answer. I know of some good examples. I heard from one in Germany where I went to a conference not too long ago where young people were having a helpline where other young people could call in. And I think you would find that the number of cases where, for instance, sexual abuse or sexual solicitation were much higher reported to that specific helpline compared to a helpline run by adults. So there might also be a factor of trying to understand who's disclosing what to whom. There might be the fear of a young person if they disclose situations to an adult that the response is going to be closing down, because the adult, not understanding, is fearful, and for that reason the response to it is actually not a positive or constructive reply. However, if we claim that the internet has not amplified the risks and the abuse of children online, I don't really believe that we are truly showing the picture of we face today. I'm especially referring to issues like non-contact sexual abuse via webcam, for instance. Those are incidents that are recent in terms of research, at least. It didn't happen 3 or 4 years ago, at least not to our knowledge. It seems to be something that is more and more going on. But no evidence is actually here for me to back this up, apart from what we hear from contacting people and when we hear about stories from psychiatrists who deals with victims and so forth. But quite clearly, it's something I believe that we need to look into, these non-contact issues. Another thing that also comes up is sexting. So that whole thing of actually trying to or using new technologies and be exploited through them, through the use of them. It is interesting for me then to also understand whether EU Kids Online and the current network, or at least the future members, I'm not sure whether you're going to or planning to increase the membership and so forth, whether you inside the network itself have the adequate, and excuse the term, but adequate institutions to actually be able to combine the facts that would shed light on the non-contact sexual abuse and exploitation. Second point that I think is amplified through online or the internet is the escalation of a conflict in relation to bullying, in relation to two people offline, in an offline situation where you would have a conflict that basically goes through different stages of escalation, so they become reaching a point basically of no return where they can't become friends anymore and they raise their fists or do something similar. Online, I think there's good evidence to suggest that you tend to skip a couple of these natural steps of progression. So you would actually go pretty quickly into a situation where there's no return, and you would actually start threatening the other person, possibly because you don't really feel aware of the consequences of what you've written down, because it's only words that you write down. It's letters. It's black and white or yellow and brown and whatever. And you send it to different persons. You don't see the facial reaction of the other person. It's something you write, you forget, and go away with. But the person who receives it, of course, is left with this. The third thing, the ability of vulnerable children who have problems with self-esteem, for instance, they can find peers online with similar challenges. This might be good if those peers they encounter and talk to help them with coping strategies and exit strategies and how they actually, well, exit strategies is not a good term, but how they can actually deal with this lack of self-esteem or the problems they're challenging. That's all very good. On the contrary, if you meet some people online who would amplify that ill feeling or lack of confidence and so forth and actually reinforce that state, that could have detrimental effects on the young person encountering this. And I think compared to offline and online, it's a bit more difficult for a person with that to reach out and encounter similar challenges. So to refer to a note in the final report from the EU Kids Online, and a recommendation from here at least, I think it's recommendable that we maybe focus on the vulnerable children, so the groups that are at high risk, in high risk situations, and especially if we assume that there's a high probability that the large proportion of abused children. They come from dysfunctional homes, dysfunctional offline situations, that they are also the ones that then end up being exploited online. And I think for us as a child protection agency and advocates, it's not really reaching the masses and trying to reinforce a message they can decode and make them understand, yes, the traffic light means yes, green, yellow and red, and the internet needs to be followed by certain rules. It is really also to reach that marginalized group, the one that the mass-produced and very effective, normally otherwise very effective awareness material and teachings, they don't reach. We need to also focus on them, and we need to have a better understanding on how we can target and tailor interventions to reach them and try to prevent these children ending up in very good situations. I realize time is of the essence, and drinks is in between me and you. I just want to give two small comments. Annie was also mentioning the fact about location services and privacy, and I believe it is a massive policy challenge to actually create a better understanding and ensure that children and young people, they really understand that handing out private information in exchange of a good, a service, an application does have implications. Maybe not instantly. Maybe you're actually giving access to a third party who produces this, or a retailer, or what we should call them, to gather some information on you, but that information is not necessarily used in the way that you think it is. Very often you find terms of conditions that are too long to read, or not being bothered to read them, or you can't even read it because it's legal baffle, and I don't understand it myself. Go figure, somebody who's 14 years old or 15 years old going through that. It's not happening. So I think we need to be able to understand better how and how this is perceived by young people and how we can address it adequately so they are more informed when they make their choices. In terms of parents, I understand that parents is one of the most difficult target groups to reach out and understand how we can involve them and engage them in creating appropriate safety messages and tools. But is it true that children, they would rather be taught internet safety in schools and thereby through the use of teachers than coming back home and being told by somebody who is their parent about, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that? I think it's a question you need to ask, whether the importance of involving parents is the next frontier we really need to go for strongly, or whether we need to reinforce current structures. Final one is, I have not heard the word religion and ethnicity very much. I've heard cultural values and differences and so forth, but in modern societies as we live in today, you would find different groups of ethnic origins and religious beliefs that really does address risks and perceptions of such very differently. Can we also try and include that and give a picture of whether we need to really address it or not? I believe from our own experience in Save the Children Denmark that we have the two, the bilingual, not Danish ethnical citizens who respond completely different to the messages we try to come across with. And I think that's something we need to address at a broader level as well. Thank you very much.
I know Sonia's going to say a few words, and it is almost drinking time, and I'm sorry, I think we shouldn't do Q&As right now, but we're around and we'll all be chatting outside, so I think there's plenty of opportunity to pick up any points. But firstly, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Sonia Livingston for her work bringing this together, for writing the report. I've been very proud of Sonia. I probably haven't told her really, because you tend to have a fight with her rather than be nice to her, but I remember being in Washington about 2 years ago, and she spoke in the big American, and it is a big deal when you go to Washington, and I remember being very proud of Sonia as somebody from the UK and speaking so intelligently, so thoroughly and robustly and critically, and making such a huge contribution, I felt. And at that point, she was very much owned by the UK. But I think with the UN, the EU Kids Online, I think she's really taken her position as a European. And I think you can all be proud now of Sonia's reflection of your work in her report. I think it's an amazing report. It's very articulate. It's very well It's very well written, and I think it's a stake in the ground for Europe and child safety and all the initiatives and all the work that's going on. So I feel very proud of her, and I think we should give her a round of applause and thank her.
Time is late, but I would like to make a couple of closing remarks. Firstly, I'm delighted that we had the opportunity to present the work of EU Kids Online today, and I think we have also listened to many of the comments and contributions that have been made by others familiar with the network, from outside the network, the research community, and both industry and policy communities. I think it's been very valuable in both directions. While I appreciate the comments of Annie and Janice and a number of others, I would like to stress this really has been a collaborative enterprise, very much a European project in which colleagues from 21 countries have worked together, and it, all our reports are, in that sense, collaborative. We've put everything on the website. We put on the website the joint reports and also often single country reports reflecting the different circumstances in different countries, as well as the materials, and we will, I think this is all being both audio and video recorded, so we will put up slides, materials and recordings from today. I think most people here, or many people here, if they're involved in the network, will be present tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'd just like to say again, 9 o'clock, for the kickoff of the new project, at least for the first part of the day, we very much hope to hear from everybody who would like to contribute and give us some guidance in how we do EU Kids Online too. I wanted to say we have a book coming out. The book is sent off to the publisher and will be published and out in September. And we hope that everyone will find that, again, a useful and interesting synthesis of our findings, put into an academic context, but also it's coming out with the policy press, and it is designed also to be accessible and useful, we hope, for people in the policy community. So we have a drink for everybody outside in the foyer. I gather the sun came out today, but I'm afraid we just didn't get to see it, so perhaps tomorrow will be better. I would like to end by thanking, first of all, I think Eva Galia must be here somewhere, the Safer Internet Programme, and all her and her colleagues in Luxembourg for funding our research and allowing all this to happen. I'd like to thank all of today's speakers, both from the network and other researchers and others from outside the network, for helping make today a success. I'd like to thank our advisory board. I'd also like to thank the helpers who've been running around and making this possible with the microphones and the water and the so forth. And just a little more, there's one other person that I would like to thank very much, who has been behind the scenes working in an astonishing fashion, making so much of the day possible and everything come together in one moment. And that is my colleague sitting in the front here, Anjana Das, who I would like also, if everyone would please put their hands together and say thank you. So one thing Ranjana didn't organise. So please do go outside and have a drink and stay in touch with the project. Thank you.
Excuse me for 1 minute. Please excuse me for occupying your time, but just 1 minute, I promise. As you know, this is the end of a 3 years project network. So there are quite a lot of emotions in the room, and I would like to express at least some of them. The most significant phrase of this project I will ever remember from this network is, "Sonia and Leslie outlined the day." each agenda for all the project meetings started each day with this sentence. And so they did. And they did not only outline each day of these project meetings, they outlined the whole project, all the publication, all the work packages. And they did it in a way that a real network developed. So we didn't feel that they guided us. We felt we did the work, although they did it. So it was really a networking activity which made working in this network really an inspiring and productive and really satisfying experience. So to make it short, I think I may speak in the name of all the network members that it was really a fantastic job that Sonia and Leslie and Panayota and Ranjana have done. And I wanted to make this because the last applause is for you.